Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Senator Blumenthal, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, of course. No problem. So I had a big question yesterday. It was in our news headlines in regards to Russian interference. There was a claim that you and Senator Chris Murphy were making that there's more Russian interference in this year's election than even the 2016 presidential election. How do you know that?
We know that from intelligence sources. We've received classified briefings. In fact, my point is that the American people should receive the information we're getting in this secret setting. The American people deserve to know, but we're sworn to secrecy because they are classified briefings. The fact of the matter is, if you look at the report the State Department put out just a number of weeks ago as to what's happening globally, the hacking into registration, use of foreign operatives, hiring of writers to spread disinformation. There's no reason to think, even though that pertains to what's happening globally, that the same thing isn't happening here in the United States. So Russian disinformation propaganda is part of their apparatus, their GRU, their intelligence agency, the Internet Research Agency, also known as the IRA, both of them state supported and sponsored, are acting to spread disinformation. And typically they engage most heavily in this kind of malign activity during the week before the election.
But I guess how would we, so in the 2016 election, we I don't think had as much of a handle on this versus now, you know, we have all these protections in place. We're so aware of it with the internet and with social media and things like that. To say it's worse than 2016 seems like a bit much, no?
Well, it's measurable by the intelligence community. It's also been detected by Facebook and Twitter and other platforms. In fact, they've taken down a number of the posts and ads and so forth that have been put there by Russian intelligence. And yesterday I asked the heads of those platforms, the companies that do the big tech, Twitter, Facebook, and Google, the CEOs, including Mark Zuckerberg, said that they were very, very concerned.
Okay.
And they were trying to take steps against it.
Okay. Now, what about in that same report, I'm seeing that in the intelligence report that does show Russia wants President Trump to win, it also makes mention about China and Iran, and it seems like they're in favor of Biden. Are we not concerned about that?
We're concerned about any intelligence agent trying to interfere in our elections and meddle with them so as to throw off the results or sow discord and division, or simply diminish the credibility of elections. When they say the elections are rigged or when there are false posts and so forth, or frankly, when the president says mail-in ballots are fraught with fraud, counting should stop on November 3rd, it creates confusion and leads people maybe to say, my vote's not going to count, so I'm not going to go to the polls or I'm not going to mail in my ballot. We want to counter that kind of confusion when it is spread and sowed by foreign malign influences, not just Russia, but also Iran and China. But Russia seems the primary culprit, and I'm concerned about it. So is the intelligence community and most of my Senate colleagues, no matter who it helps.
Right. But I think people would also argue that if we've got countries like China and Iran who are also weighing in on this and they would like former Vice President Joe Biden to win, that it's just as much as a concern as Russia, no?
The activity by those two other countries, depending on how you measure it, seems less active and aggressive at this point. But you're absolutely right that no matter what country, no matter what foreign influence, no matter what attempt to meddle in our elections, we ought to counter it.
talking this morning with Senator Richard Blumenthal. And Senator, last week, before the final debate happened between former Vice President Joe Biden and President Donald Trump, there were claims made by Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden's ex-business associate. I'm sure you heard about this, Tony Babulinski, saying that he's been lying, that Joe Biden had been lying about involvement with his family's overseas dealings. What can you make of that? What is kind of your response to that? That's been pretty big news in the last week.
I'm still having trouble trying to make sense of what the exact claim is. And so far as I can see, it's fallen flat because there really are no facts to support it.
I guess he's saying that he has heard that Joe Biden never discussed his dealings with Hunter, and he's coming right out saying that's not true. He did. He has firsthand knowledge about that happening and says he directly dealt with the Biden family, including Joe Biden himself.
I have seen no evidence to support those claims by somebody whose credibility certainly has been questioned. There's nothing in any of the facts I've seen to support it.
Okay. Senator Richard Blumenthal, we appreciate you coming on this morning. We'll talk again next week after the election and hope you have a good rest of your week.
You too. Thanks so much, Melissa. Take care.
We are just days away from the election, and I think this topic is so fitting, not just for the election period, but even just in society in general. We've got the pandemic. There are a lot of tensions going on. We're living in a very intense world, I think is the best way to put it. And to talk about this a little bit more and how we can kind of translate this to our younger generation, Stephanie Swantek is here with the Be Safe Project, which is out of Bridges Healthcare in Milford. And Steph, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Thank you very much.
So empathy. I think that's the big lesson today that we're going to talk about. And what,
yes.
First of all, where would you like to start with this? Because it's a pretty big topic.
So I guess psychologically, there's actually four steps or four pieces of empathy or four building blocks, if you kind of want to put it in that perspective. And so empathy is broken down into four pieces, one being perspective taking, really kind of understanding where the other person's coming from, which is just listening. And then number two is staying out of judgment, which is hard because I think a lot of us like to judge. It's actually what protects us. And then three is kind of recognizing emotion and then communicating that. So which is creates the feeling, the connection, and the understanding of where someone's coming from instead of just their action or what they're doing, but really where that person's coming from so that we feel a little deeper and we feel connected to that person.
What do we do, Steph, if we don't have empathy? What happens?
It's that disconnection. It's that that's what increases the judgment. That's what increases toxicity. That's what increases just people doing their own thing and lack of accountability. We all strive, right, for love, acceptance, and connection. Like that's the foundation. That's from a child, as an adult, right? We all want to be accepted and loved and cared for and taken care of for. When we're not feeling, it's actually very dangerous, right? We're kind of that we can get out of control and just be doing things because we don't understand where other people are coming from and what they're actually feeling.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Stephanie Swantek this morning. And Steph, I guess with the election coming up, I think it's pretty clear that, all those things you just mentioned, tension, judgment, things like that, I'm finding it on both sides of the aisle. This really has nothing to do with your political views, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican. I think both sides have showed for a lot of people in our world that we are so hard on each other and we are so quick to attack. And it feels like the capacity to have an open mind and have conversation and not to end friendships or to walk away from people because they don't agree with you. I think that tolerance has lessened and lessened, especially the closer we get to this election.
Correct. I couldn't agree more. And that's with that said, right? The election is who you're voting for, and so it does feel very personal to us. Mm-hmm. But if we can take the personal out of it and really just feel not of who are you voting for, but it is why are you voting for that person, right? And a lot of times it has nothing to do with the person and what they represent.
Right.
But for you, it's you feeling something that you're lacking in some other area of your life. And so you're like, I need this to survive. I need this for my family. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times what you need in your family is the same thing that I need in my family.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's true. But I think we're too clouded a lot of times by the appearance of somebody or just hearing a bunch of policies that you're right. I think the basis of why am I voting for this person? What are we looking for personally? And a lot of times we probably would agree. You know, it's funny, Stephanie, because I get criticized for this all the time. But this exact reason is why I think we should like abolish parties altogether, because you'll find more times than not, if people sit down, I have literally sat down with both sides of the aisle. And if you could sit down, take the politics out of everything and just talk about human rights and what's good for people and what's good for our economy, it's amazing how many times you can get each other to agree. But as soon as you say, oh, well, that's a Republican idea, or oh, that's a Democratic idea, if you are on the opposite side, you're like, oh, well, then I don't want it. And it's like, well, that's weird, because you just said you wanted it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's that label.
Yeah. It is the label. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what separates us. And again, disconnects us and separates us. And that's exactly what other people want, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have power, and empathy is power. If we can all feel and we can all connect, imagine the strength all people would have, all families, all partnerships, organizations, however you want to look at it. If you feel connected, then we look out for each other, right? It's more of that divide and separation, and we're feeling like just further connected. And the more that we can recognize that we're all feeling stuck and maybe in a darker place, and then we're overwhelmed, that's the more how we can see clearly how where the empathy is needed, mm-hmm. and how we can be there for each other.
And I imagine, Steph, this is probably something you talk to your students about, but I would imagine, here's what I'm fearful about. So this election is going to come and go. This person is either going to serve another 4 years. This person is either going to start for of possibly 8 years. Who knows? What I'm getting at is it's a short amount of time in the lifespan of your children. And I think the bigger picture here is how your actions are and how that then relates to your kids and how they're going to grow up. I think if you're modeling a household where you're judging, you're hard on people, you walk away from people who don't agree with you, you're narrow-minded, you're hateful, whatever the case may be, that reflects on your children. And that's who's now making up our next generation.
100%. And to add to that, Melissa, is just kind of keeping in mind that how we respond to things does not, in general, it does not make a situation better. Mm-hmm. What makes something, and this can be anything, this can be a simple disagreement with your partner or your child or whatever it may be. The response to something usually does not make the other person feel better. The connection does. When you fully feel heard and understood, That is what makes a situation better or a relationship better or anything better. It's not just how I respond to you, if that makes sense.
It does. It absolutely does. It's kind of the process versus, you know, right. Yeah, exactly. I think you're absolutely right. So,
and it's getting vulnerable and deep. And that's what we're actually, at the end of the day, we're all craving that.
Mm-hmm.
But we are afraid to admit it and recognize it.
Oh, sure. Because I think that more times than not, if we're being honest, if you're vulnerable, you put yourself out there. Right now in the world we live in, you get shot down. And that's a scary thing. That's a really scary thing. It's almost better to bottle it up is how I think a lot of people feel. But that doesn't make things better. It really doesn't.
No, it just creates more of a divide.
Yeah, it really does. Now, Steph, if people want to reach out to you, they want to maybe get some more information from you, or maybe they want your advice on how to kind of open up their minds a little bit more or find empathy in their lives, how can they reach out to you?
Absolutely. So again, I work for Bridges Healthcare. I'm the program manager for the Be Safe Project. So you can go to our webpage. Also, you can contact me via phone, 475-202-2827.
Simple enough. Stephanie Swantek, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Brown. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So I know of anyone, I'm sure, that you sort of expected for our numbers to start creeping back up again. What were your reactions when you learned we were just over 4% for a positivity rate for COVID?
Yeah, you know, you're correct, Melissa. You know, we were expecting this. I know you and I spoke about this. This was coming. I got to tell you that, you know, it's here and it's coming, and it may even get a little bit, a little bit more. But I think our state's doing a good job. You know, we really are. I mean, we're taking precautions. We're, You know, I know schools are closing, but sort of intermittently, we're not having this blanket close everything. So I think, I think this is, you know, this is expected, and I think people need to continue to be hypervigilant on wearing their masks and washing their hands.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the governor is saying, listen, I know that we're having our infection rate go up, but he said, you know, I don't want you shutting down schools. I don't want businesses shutting down, because it doesn't sound like that's where the infection is coming from. It sounds like it's these social gatherings. And I didn't know if you could kind of touch on that a little bit, where we're seeing the infections across the state. It sounds like it's essentially it's parties. It sounds like people are gathering together. There's too many people. So I guess my question to you is, first, if you could touch on that, but also, you know, I know that the governor has kind of upped capacity numbers. He's allowed for a certain number of people to be indoors, even more outdoors. But at this point, with our infection rate going up, what would you recommend to people, especially like with the holidays coming, when it comes to having social gatherings? Because that seems to be the problem.
Yeah, that and you're exactly right, Melissa. And again, I'm very proud of our governor and sort of the next steps to say, look, you know, we'll get through this like we did before, but now we have a better understanding of what this is and how to contain it. But yes, I think the problem is, and I could tell you from the hospitals and hospital standpoint, we do great when we're dealing with employees and patients, and our patient, the spread between patients and employees to patients is non-existent. It's not happening in any of our hospitals. It's actually really good. What happens is that everybody relaxes after work, gets together, and then they, you know, they're around friends and family and say, well, they don't have it. I'm not really worried about it. So the mask comes off, the hugging and the kissing continue or restarts. I haven't seen you in a while. And unfortunately, that's the way that it's shared. I mean, anything from sharing certain types of things, not that I say you should be smoking, but I mean sharing cigarettes and sharing vapes and all these other things that, I mean, we just need to take some common sense. We are still in a pandemic, and we need to say, okay, you know what, it's probably not in our best interest to be getting that close. You know, an outdoor gathering, you know, remaining 6 feet away, you know, I think is a good thing. I think wearing your mask, even if it is family member, and being very, very careful about your elderly loved ones, because they're the ones who are at high risk of getting a lot of complications from it.
Talking to Dr. Fred Brown this morning of Griffin Health. You know, Dr. Brown, I was kind of surprised, but the governor had released earlier this week, or maybe it was Dr. Gifford, I can't remember, but one of them had said this week that a quarter of our new infections in this surge are actually like teenagers.
Yes.
They're mostly teenagers. So I don't know what you're seeing at the hospital, but I know they have a better chance of kind of recovering quicker and having sort of a rebound effect. But are you guys finding that you've got younger patients now than you did like back in the spring?
So what we're finding is, because we do both inpatient and outpatient testing, we have a testing tent in which we actually have people who are exposed or are concerned can actually get tested. We are noticing that there's clearly an increase in that age group, the 18 to 25 area. There's clearly an increase there, but we're not necessarily seeing them in the emergency department. The problem is that when the 18 to 25, and again, I'm sort of guesstimating a little bit on that, but the 18 to 25, when they show up home and then they infect, you know, the 40s and then it goes up from there, that's sort of, we're seeing that a little bit of a spinoff. So we're seeing it back in nursing homes, which is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing. So it's about sort of, okay, we need to try to deal with our youth and say, look, you know what, it's not about you. It's about, you know, what you can carry and bring to someone else, and that's the biggest issue. 95% of people who get COVID-19 do fine. You know, the problem is that, you know, and it's very likely that the younger people are going to be absolutely fine,
mm-hmm.
but if they bring it to someone who's older, that's when things get a little disastrous.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Dr. Brown, this week my sister came back from college. She tested negative already, so that's great. But she was talking to me about a couple of her friends who she's been with since, elementary school, or some of them. But they're at college now. They have had COVID before. So one of her friends had it early in the summer. Another one had it back in August. Healthy, young, fine. But they have noticed that, you know, months have gone by And one of them still can't taste anything. Another one, when she does homework, has to take frequent breaks because she's having neurological long-term effects, it seems like, that she never really had before. Do we have any more information? Are we still seeing, I keep calling them long haulers, but are we still seeing, you know, this mystery of young people getting COVID and dealing with aftermath effects months later?
Yes, and we are. And this is, again, given sort of what we're dealing with. And you don't, let me just sort of take it back a little bit, Melissa, and say, you know, you don't really see this that much with the flu because we don't have as many people who get the flu in a short period of time.
Sure.
But this actually occurs with the flu also. And it occurs with numerous other bacterial and viral infections. So this is a post-infection syndrome. And it does take quite a bit of time to get back to normal. There's no indication that it won't return to normal, but I have heard that before, that, you know, loss of taste and smell can last for a while.
Wow.
So I'm not surprised about it. And again, I would say don't get worried, don't get upset, do what you can to sort of get through it, but it will resolve.
Okay. Well, that actually is really helpful. I didn't realize that. So thank you so much, Dr. Brown. And we appreciate always having you come on the show and give us your perspective on things. We will connect again next week.
Excellent. Very good. It was nice talking to you, Melissa, and stay safe.
Yes, you too. Always great to talk to you, Dr. Brown.